What about the flip chart? Could be useful. First of all, thank you for the invitation. That was a big surprise. It started with an email coming from Lou saying, could you help me? I would like to know a good commentary on the book of Mark. So the first mail was sent to Daniel Duda, and Daniel Duda forwarded to me, saying, well, could you answer to this mail? So I answered to this mail about the Gospel of Mark, and then, would you be able to come? Why not? Why not? Okay. Thank you also for the introduction this morning. Perfect. The topic will be on Jesus. Even though, you probably know that the book of Hebrews is a very difficult one. Maybe we can just start opening our Bible in chapter 5 of Hebrews. Chapter 5. I would like someone to read verse 11, please. 5:11. That's not for you. That's not for us. But that is the beginning in 5:11. That is the beginning of the most important part of Hebrews. And the author of Hebrews is saying to the audience, well, I have a difficult topic to address. And your translation said, could you repeat it again, please? 5:11. Just the first words. About this. Okay. We could discuss the translation. It's not this neutral, but about him. And if you go back to verse 10:9, him is Jesus. All right? Or the high priest. Okay. So we have a difficult topic to address together, but I'm pretty sure that with the help of the Holy Spirit, we will be able to to find good answers and meaningful answers for our ministry today. Because, of course, I'm pretty sure that our ministry is to preach Jesus. We are not there to preach a church, but we are there to preach Jesus. And that is the topic, that is exactly the topic of Hebrews. So, again, why those two words? Okay, thank you very much. If I say very much, it's a bit Scottish. I enjoyed so much last summer to be in Ireland. Oh, the Irish accent, that is lovely. Very much. I appreciate very much. All right. So, deconstruction. And reconstruction. With deconstruction, I put the word temple. You have to understand right at the beginning that for me, temple is more than the building itself. It's a system. All right? More than a building. Building included, but more than a building. And behind reconstruction, the main word is gospel. And when I write gospel here, it's of course more than the four gospels. It is Jesus. All right? So there is a kind of opposition between temple, or there will be an opposition between temple and gospel. When I say deconstruction, it's not to say that we have to demolish the temple and the system. But just to introduce the topic, I would like us to read in Hebrews. And please, we need to have a Bible. I see that you have, each one of you, a Bible. And when I give verses, I would like you just to to catch it them quickly and to read them, because we need to go ahead quickly. So I will give some quotes, some references now, and I would like for each verse someone to read. So we start in Hebrew 1:4. And then I would like someone to read in Hebrew 7:7. And somebody else in 7:19. And somebody else in 7:22. Somebody else in 8:6. Another one in 9:23. 10:34. 11:16. 11:35. 11:40. And the last one, 12:24. Got it? So the first one, Hebrews 1:4. Please, loudly.
Having become so much better than the angel, as he has inherited a more excellent name than they have.
Okay. So I don't comment right now, but I would like you to try to have in your mind this first verse. And the second one, 7:7.
And without doubt, the lesser person is blessed by the greater.
Okay. Do you see a link, not a thematic link, but with the words, between this first one, 1:4, and this one? Amazingly, the translation is not the same, but maybe we need to read the third verse. That is 7:19. 7:19.
For the law made nothing perfect. On the other hand, there is the bringing in of a better hope.
Okay, so you should see the link between the three verses we just read. There is a word they have in common. Better. What is the topic of Hebrews? Something better is coming. Or someone, both, is coming. And I would like, and that, you see the point with your translation, it was greater or something like that?
Yes, greater.
Well, but in Greek, the adjective is the same. If you want to brush your Greek, kraton, which is agathos. Comparative of agathos. So we have it in 1:4, better. We have it in 7:7. We have it in 7:19. What about 7:22? Someone to read?
Because of this oath, Jesus has become the guarantee of a better covenant.
A better covenant. Thank you. And 8:6. We have it twice in 8:6. Please.
Christ has ordained a ministry which is as much more excellent than the old, as the covenant he meditates is better, since it is enacted on better promises.
Better covenant and better promises, twice in the same verse. So we were in 8:6. What about 9:23? Better sacrifices indeed. All right, that was 9:23. What about 10:34?
For you had compassion on me in my chains, and joyfully accepted the plundering of your goods, knowing that you have a better and an enduring possession for yourselves in heaven.
A better and enduring possession in heaven. 10:34, and the next one, 11:16.
But as it is, they desire a better country, that is, a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God. He has prepared for them a city.
That is very Adventist. We are looking for a better country. Mm-hmm. Not we? Mm-hmm. A better country. And then, the last one, 11:35. Quite surprising, 11:35.
Women received back their dead, raised to life again. Others were tortured and refused to be released, so that they might gain a better.
what can it be? A better resurrection? That is a kind of leitmotiv. You say leitmotiv in English? Leitmotiv? Better. And he's so interested with better that he's ready to say a better resurrection. Well, one is, we know two resurrections, but a better one. You see how it is important for him? And the last one, 12:24, please.
To Jesus, the mediator of a new covenant, and to the sprinkled blood that speaks a better word than the blood of Abel.
A better word. Okay, so if I put it together, better hope, better covenant, better promises, better sacrifices, better country, better resurrection, better word. 10 times. If you go to your computer, if you use a tool like Bible Works, you ask for Creighton, you push the button and you will have 10 answers. That is very significant in Hebrews. We have only 13 times Creighton in the New Testament. 13 times. But out of 13, 10 are in Hebrews. So you understand what I say? The topic of Hebrews is something or somebody who is better. And sorry, that is the gospel for me. Better. And you understand why the topic might be interesting and relevant for us today. But let me try to have a comparison. John, what kind of car you drive?
Vauxhall Zafira.
So a Vauxhall, that is very German and British together. Okay. So if I say to you, well, it would be better to drive a Renault. I don't think so. Unfortunately, I have a Renault, but that was just a car waiting for us at our arrival in England, but that's not a car, that's a mistake. Okay, forget it. I can't understand how they can be world champion. Okay, but if I say to you, well, it would be better to drive a Renault than a Vauxhall, what would you say?
No,
but you would ask to me, well, could you give me good reason to change my Vauxhall for a Renault? I have something better. Okay, if it was a Mercedes or a BMW against a Vauxhall, you would say, okay, let's do it quickly. But, you know, I have something better for you. Well, the addresses of the book, they had their practices. They had their habits. They had their understanding. They had their understandings. And so this man, Paul or somebody else, I don't know, and that's not important for us to be sure that it is Paul or not. We could lose and spend a lot of time on this topic and it's not that important. So, okay, you are coming with something better, but could you explain a bit? How is it better? Is it worthwhile? Better promises, better covenant. We have already a covenant. You understand that if you say, I have for you a better covenant, that means that they had already a covenant. But you are coming saying, well, your covenant is rubbish maybe. I have a better one for you. Oh, please, could you explain that? We are not ready to leave, to quit the covenant we have, to follow your covenant. What is your covenant about? And you know, you understand the play between deconstruction and reconstruction. Deconstruction is the first part. I need to explain to you why your covenant is not that good in order for you to accept the better covenant. I need to explain to you why your promises, well, okay, they were good, but they are not the best ones. I have better promises for you. I need to explain to you why your temple, your holy place is a nice one, but I have something better for you. I need to explain to you why you had priests and high priests, but I have somebody who is better than those. Deconstruction, reconstruction. You understand the point? Is it clear? If it is not clear, we need to spend as much time as necessary to build on this basis. All right? It's not to demolish, but it is to say, well, okay, you had those, but I'm coming with a new proposal, in fact, and a new proposal is the gospel. All right? So, and you understand that, in fact, Jesus did exactly the same. And it is also a good way to link for us Hebrews with the rest of the New Testament and the rest of the Bible. You know that this book was in a very difficult position at the beginning. A large part of the Christianity was not ready to accept it in the canon. The church was split in two parts. Western church saying, we don't want it. No name. Who wrote it? No addresses. Well, it's not an epistle. It starts. It starts very surprisingly. It's not an epistle. And we cannot... And what about the title? To the Hebrews, you know that the title does not belong to the manuscript. You have to wait to the end of the second century to have the title to the Hebrews. It's not part of the text itself. So that is a very strange text. So it was very difficult for this book to be accepted into the canon. And you remember the story of Luther saying, I don't want Hebrews and I don't want the book of Revelation. So that is a very difficult book, but we need to link it, to put it, well, as a pieces in the big puzzle. All right? So I just said that Jesus said exactly the same. If we go, for example, to the Gospel of John, chapter 6, you remember? The topic, what is the topic? Well, the main topic of John, chapter 6. The bread. And what is the problem here? Jesus is coming, saying about the bread, I am the bread, I have the good bread. Oh, I am the bread. And what is the answer of the Jews? We have a bread coming from God. Coming from God. And you see, that is deconstruction, reconstruction. I have a better bread. I have a better bread. And what about Jesus in the same gospel, just two chapters before that, chapter 4? The Samaritan woman. What did Jesus say to her? About the water. A living water. A better water. If you drink, lady, if you drink this water, never you will be in need of coming to this wheel and to a better water. And you remember when the disciples came back, they went to the shops in Sichar and they went back with their bags. So do you want to, well, you were hungry with just at the beginning of the chapter. Jesus was hungry and tired. So it's time to eat. No, sorry. Better bread, better drink. I don't need yours. You see the point? And you see the link between Hebrews and the New Testament. And well, sometimes, if I may, I will have some pastoral comment. May I? Yes, I am a teacher, but I was a pastor for 10 years. Also, and I don't want to forget this background. What about our ministry? Is it the ministry of the better? If we want to survive as a church, Adventist church, better is very important. So many churches today, so many ministries, so many gospels which are preached, What are we doing? How are we doing things? Better. My friend, if you take the gospel I give to you, that is the best one. And I am preaching, I am trying to preach it in the best way I can. Mediocrity cannot be part of our ministry. Also, you understand what I mean? I don't want to speak as a president, but I'm pretty sure that you understand what I've said. So, we have two options here. Either with this play between deconstruction and reconstruction, either you have a nice audience ready to follow you. Okay, I have a better covenant. Okay, preach it, share it, we will accept it straight on. Or you have a very demanding audience, and that is the case here. Because what? Maybe we need to come back to 5:11 and read the next verses. Could we do that, please? So 5:11 to 14. Are you in 5:11? So, what is the problem of the audience, of the addresses? Could you tell me, reading those verses, what was their problem? Immaturity, yes. Could we develop a bit? Yes, of course, spiritual immaturity, yes.
Lack of growth.
That is interesting, yes. What else? Yes, you are right, but you are going too far according to those verses. Oh, yeah, but you are on a good track, yes. Yes, but what was... Yes, please.
They're not acquainted with the teaching of righteousness.
They are not acquainted with the teaching of righteousness, yes. But what should they... What is the word which is used in verse 12? You... should be teachers, but you are not. So, you know, it's a kind of VIP group. They should have been teachers, but they are no teachers. They need milk. And Hebrews is saying to them, well, you should have the basic elements of the oracles of God. Start from scratch, but you should be teachers. And the point is in verse 11, since you have become dull in understanding, or the best translation is sluggish. Sluggish, apathetic. Okay? Come on. And you are not able to have solid food. I need to start from scratch. But in fact, he will not do that. If you read in verse 6:1, could someone read 6:1, please?
Therefore, let us leave the elementary teachings about Christ and go on to maturity, not laying again the foundation of repentance from acts that lead to death and of faith in God.
Okay, you see the point? You need milk, but I will not give you milk. Because you should have been teachers. So I will treat you as teachers. All right? And that is the point here. But that is why the topic is difficult. A sluggish audience should have been teachers, but they are not. And it would have been necessary to start from scratch, but he will not do that. I don't want to start with the basic teaching about Christ. You should know that. You know that. So stop to be sluggish. All right? So the background or the target of Hebrews is the following, is to demonstrate the limitations and the weaknesses of their beliefs, of their practices, that is deconstruction, and then to present the superiority of the new proposal, that is reconstruction. And here we have a question, which is a very important and a very difficult one. Between deconstruction and reconstruction, do we have continuity or discontinuity? That is a very important question. Is the new proposal the fulfillment of the first one? And in that case, we have continuity between deconstruction and reconstruction. Or, is the new offer, the reconstruction, the opposite of the deconstruction, of the first offer? In that case, we would have discontinuity and not continuity. Well, that is a very important question. To make it clear, with other words, do we have a continuity between the old covenant and the new covenant? Do we have a continuity between the first system and the new system? Or is the new system the fulfillment of the first one? Or do we have a break between the two? That is the point. Do we have continuity between Old Testament and New Testament? Or is it another story? Well, right now, it is impossible to answer to this question. The text will help us later to give an answer, but I think it is important to ask this question right at the beginning. Do we have the copies? Yes? Oh, that is marvelous. So I just need right now those ones to be circulated. Right. Left over here. Okay, thank you. So that is in fact the program of the 2 days. I've given a title, just a working title, the dialectic of the cults. Dialectics, you understand, the opposition between two cults. The first one, that is part deconstruction, chapter 8, verse 3 to 9, 10. And then the second The second cult, the new cult, the Reconstruction, 9-11 to 10-19. If you look at the paragraphs, you see that I start from small c, and then small b, and then small a, and then capital A, capital B, capital C. All right? That is a parallelism. All right? If you go down the page, you see that C, of course, small c and big c, capital C, are going together, and that is the place of worship. The topic is the place of worship, mainly. You understand that there is a thematic link between C and C. Above, B and B, and the topic is the covenant. Small b is the first covenant, capital B is the new covenant. And you understand that the top, again, small e and capital E, the rituals. In fact, you understand that deconstruction is on the left and reconstruction is on the right. Is it clear? You understand also that, well, we will come later on that, but I would like us to go to the text, just 8:1. Someone to read 8:1, please. Stop. Thank you. The main point starts here. 8:1. That is the core, the central part of Hebrews. That is the main point. All right? And the main point is this dialectic of the cults, which you have in this page. The main point of what we are saying. Okay, just to help you to set the limits of those small paragraphs, if you take, well, I hope it works with your English Bible, I mean the English translation you use. If you go to verse, let's say verse 8, 8:2, someone could read 8:2? Or 8:1 and 2, not to cut the sentence in two parts, please.
Now the point in what we are saying is this. We have such a high priest, one who is seated at the right hand of the throne of the majesty in heaven, a minister in the holy places, in the true tent.
Okay, thank you. Can you now read 8:6?
But as it is, Christ has obtained a ministry that is a much more excellent.
Thank you. There is a link between the two verses with a word. Which word?
Ministry.
Yes. So you see, in Hebrews, you can look for what is called inclusion. Inclusion is a literary device by which you bracket a paragraph with the same word at the beginning and at the end. And that is a very useful device in order to look at the outline of Hebrews. Many books and articles have been written on the outline of Hebrews. And if you want to understand and to explain and to interpret properly the book of Hebrews, you need to know how it works, how it has been built. If you don't have the plan of a big building entering into it, maybe you start, you go to the British Museum, okay? What do you have at the entrance? Just after the first door? Shops, cafeteria. You say, well, that's a nice place to eat. Sorry, forget it. That's not important. What is important is after the shops and the... what do they have? Yes, shops and cafeteria. Well, that is not important. That is absolutely, well, that is necessary to have those kinds of shops. But that is not the center of the place. You understand what I mean? You can start interpreting Hebrews, but you are just in the corridor. Man, what are you doing? Oh, that is a nice corridor. Blah, blah, blah. come in. You see the point? So we have many literary devices. That is one of the most important of those, but you can see here the limit. And if you, so you have the limit for the first C. If we read now 8:7, someone to read 8:7 and to read also 8:13, please. 8:7, 8:13.
For if there had been nothing wrong with the first covenant, no place would have been sought for another. Verse 13. By calling this covenant new, he has made the first covenant, first one, obsolete. And what is obsolete and aging will soon disappear.
So what is the link between the, what is the inclusion, the link between the two verses, the limits of our new paragraph? Covenant is just in between there. If we go next, 9:1, please, and together with 9:1, 9:10.
Then indeed, even the first covenant had ordinances of divine service on the earthly sanctuary.
All right, 9:10.
Concerned only with foods and drinks, various washings, and fleshly ordinances and foods until the time of reformation.
What is the link? Which word? Yes, ordinances. All right. And 9:11 and 14, please. 9:11 and 14. And 14.
How much more then will the blood of Christ, who through the eternal Spirit offered himself unblemished to God?
Thank you. Christ. And the last one. Sorry. 15. No. Well, it does not work perfectly, but that's good. That's not a computer working. You know, everything is. Or the Swiss or German way, you know, everything is. Alles in Ordnung, as they say in German. 9. All right. So I understand that we don't have German here. Oh, welcome. Herzlich willkommen. You see what I mean. But the Swiss are worse than the Germans. So, just a reminder of my Swiss president of the division. Okay. So, 16:23. There is a word which is very important and which will help us to interpret 9:23, which is a very difficult verse to interpret and a hot potato for the church. We come later on that. 9:16 and 9:23.
In the case of a will, it is necessary to prove the death of the one who made it.
Okay, thank you. 23.
It was necessary then for the copy.
Stop. Sorry. So, what is the link? Necessary. Necessity. There is a necessity at the beginning of the paragraph, and there is a necessity at the end. And if you want, and well, just to give you a foretaste, well, a necessity, what is the, could you just read it again, the 15?
Sorry, 15?
15, 9:15, yes. 16 it was.
In the case of the will, it is
Stop.
Necessary to prove.
In the case of, okay. And 19:23, if it is well translated.
It was necessary then.
Then is what? The conclusion of the explanation. Do we agree on that? So you have the beginning necessity, 19:16, You have the explanation, and then, okay, let us sum up the kind of necessity we have. So if you want to interpret properly 9.23, that is the conclusion of what started in 9.16 or 15. You see the point? You cannot start interpreting 9.23, otherwise you are lost. All right. So that is the capital B, and the topic is necessity. And then I should have written not a better covenant, but I should have written what is necessary to have a better covenant. Should be better as a title. And then 9.24 and 9.28.
Christ has entered, not into holy places made with hands.
Thank you. 28.
So Christ having been offered once to bear the sin.
Thank you. Christ. All right? So we have our paragraphs A, C, B, A, B, C. What is interesting, very interesting, if you start reading C, B, A, you would not find the name of Jesus. Never. Never, never. Even though you might read it in 8:6, I'm pretty sure you have it. Could we read 8:6 in any English or French or German translation? Most of them would say the same. That is 8:6, please.
But the ministry Jesus has received.
Okay. The ministry Jesus has received. You could go to your Greek. There is no Jesus, there is no Christ in this verse. It is anonymous. But when do we have, for the first time, Christ? In 9:11. Well, that's not a good place, 9:11. Sorry for that. But start reading 9:11.
Could you translate verse 6 for us, 8:6?
Oh, it would read 8:6, but he has no obtained. As simple as that. We don't have something more. But 9:11, what do we have? Christ came. But it's stronger than that in Greek, because, well, it's paragenomen, Christos te paragenomenos, he appeared. Suddenly. Christos de. And that is the beginning of the reconstruction. And surprisingly, well, that's just, it's not very serious, but still. If you calculate the number of verses in Hebrew, where is the middle? 9:11. Paragenomenos de Christos. Christos de paragenomenos. He appeared. That is reconstruction. All right? So you can draw a line. You can, yes, divide the pages in two parts. And also, as a general presentation, if we go to the left, deconstruction, most of the verbs, not all, but most of the time, the verb are in the present tense. That is the tense of repetition. We will consider that later. And most of the time we have plurals. If you go to the right hand part of the page, you have singular. You have the tense aorist, and you know I'm pretty sure you remember the difference between aorist and present tense in Greek. What do we mean by when we see a verb at the aorist tense? It has been done in the past, once for all, cannot be repeated. It has been done. You see the opposition between present tense? You need to repeat it. Aorist tense, it has been done. Well done. Okay? And Christ is the subject most of many verbs in the right hand part of this page. Okay? Do we have any question up to now. Do you want to break? Maybe 5 minutes, just to. Okay. So if we have, if you have questions, forget it.
But we're hearing, right?
Yes. Yes. So the big boss there pushed the button. So you have got your PhD. Push here, dummy.
Good one.
That is coming from one of the vice president of the GC, you know, saying to his, one of his colleagues, well, have you got your PhD? Because he was trying to start a beamer and he was not able to cope with it. Push here, dummy, you have not your PhD. All right. So sorry, Marcel. Love you. So you understand that we have six periods together. So CBAABC, that is six. Hopefully the schedule is given. But this first one, C, is maybe the biggest one, so I'm not sure if we will end with it this morning, but that's not a problem. So the worship place deconstruction, we need to, first of all, we need to have the verses in mind. So I would like some one of you to read from verse 3 to verse 6. We will consider later verse 1 and 2, so don't be afraid, we'll come back on those, but I would like us to consider 3 to 6 right now.
Chapter 8.
Yes, please.
Since all priests must offer gifts and sacrifices, Christ also needed to have something.
Forget Christ. No Christ. He sorry.
If he were here on earth, I'll change the translation.
Well, I have to say that that is one of my job too. I am a member of the United Bible Society in France, so I've worked on two Bible translations, and we started just a third one 2 weeks ago. So that is the reason why I'm very strong on translation. Yeah, sorry.
Well, every high priest is ordained to offer gifts and sacrifices. Wherefore, it is of necessity that this man have somewhat also to offer. For if he were on earth, he should not be a priest, seeing that there are priests that offer gifts according to the law, who serve under the example and shadow of heavenly things, as Moses was admonished of God when he was about to make the tabernacle. For see, saith he, that thou make all things according to the pattern shewed to thee in the mount. But now hath he obtained a more excellent ministry, by how much also he is the mediator of a better covenant which was established upon that.
Thank you. So you understand we are looking for our topic is the place. The place. Heavenly places. Oh no. Sorry. Sacred places are very important if we start reading the Bible. We have sacred places right at the beginning. You remember, we can go, for example, in Genesis 12, 8. What did Abraham do in Bethel? Genesis 12, 8. He started to build an altar. And what is the meaning of Bethel? House of God. All right? And you remember that many went back to Bethel and they were able to see or to rebuild the altar. That is very important. And if we go to Genesis 13 with Hebron and Mamre, again we have the altar and Jacob going back to Bethel in 28. So that is very important. What is surprising in the book of Hebrews is that this book does not refer to the temple. I mean, Jerusalem temple, you don't find it. But you find references to the sanctuary in the desert place. That is very important. No temple, but The background, as it is in this part, the background is the sanctuary. And so we have to start with the translation, which is a very important, of verse 5. So they offer worship in a sanctuary that is a sketch and shadow of the heavenly one. All right. So if you go back to the Greek, you will see that it's not that obvious. If you have, maybe you have heavenly sanctuary in your verse, in your translation. That is not the case in Greek. Heavenly sanctuary does not appear in this verse, but we have only the word, the adjective, epurania in Greek. And you remember urania is heaven, ep is heavenly, yes. But that is a plural, neutral. That is not heavenly sanctuary. That you could translate the heavenly things. Plural, neutral, first of all.
That's the way the excellent English Standard Version translates it.
Okay, heavenly things, all right. And what are the two words which are important in this verse? 8:5. First, yes, but okay, copy is one. What next?
Shadow.
What do you have in your translation? Copy and shadow?
Copy and shadow.
Okay. So, they offer worship, if I read my translation, Revised Standard, they offer worship in a sanctuary, which is not the case, in heavenly things, in a place, or we could delete in a heaven, in a sanctuary, because it's not in the text. They offer, if I want to translate carefully, they offer worship to a sketch and a shadow of the heavenly things. That is the translation. They offer a worship to a sketch and a shadow of heavenly things. Do you think it is a positive or... Yes, how do you understand? You are worshipping to a shadow, to a sketch and a shadow. Are you happy with that? If someone comes at the end of Sabbath morning saying, well, you worship to a shadow and a sketch of heavenly things. Thank you. Nice to meet you. Would you be happy with that?
Your worship is inadequate.
That is a very, well, nearly rude. They offer, well, subject is the priest, they offer a worship of, or to a sketch and shadow of heavenly things. But in order to make the point strong, you cannot say that like that. You need to have a quote. And the quote is coming, isn't it? Verse 6. Or no, the end of verse 5. The quote is coming from the book of Exodus. And so you have, just to introduce the quote, and your translation was pretty good, the verb used. Could you read it again?
As Moses was warned
of
God.
He was warned. So, in this quote, there is a warning. Why? And you know, it is the same verb which is used when we have, for example, the kings coming from the birth of Jesus. You remember? At the end of the story, they were warned not to go back to Herod. That is exactly, there is a danger. In this process of building the sanctuary, there is a danger, and Moses was warned, be careful. And so the danger should be explained in the quote itself. Do you follow me? Mm-hmm. So what is again the quote? You see that you make everything according to the pattern that was shown to you. That was shown you on the mountain. So there is in this quote, there is a warning. So we have to discover where is the warning. And I think the warning is around the word. What is the main word in the quote? Pattern. Yes. What is behind in Greek? Oh, you have been told yesterday night there is an exam in Greek at the end. Or Hebrew. Oh no. So what is the word in Greek we have behind pattern? Tripos. All right? Tupos. So what is, and for us, tupos, type and antitype are two words which are very, very important. All right? Okay, so but we need to investigate. What is the meaning of tupos? Well, sorry, but that is not easy to set the word, the meaning of tupos. And I would like us, that is important for us, I would like us to read all the texts in the New Testament in which we have tupos. And we will see. All right. So again, I will split the references, starting one in John 20:25. Next one in Acts chapter 7:43. Next one, Act 23:25. Next one, 1 Timothy 4:12. 1 Peter 5:3. 1 Timothy 4:12, yes. 1 Peter 5:3, 1 Corinthians 10:6, and Romans 5:14. So, let us start with John 20:25. So, and of course, you understand that in each of those verses, we have the word tupos in Greek. If you have your Bible works working, follow with a display version and search version. You have the Greek and you can check. And if I am wrong, you stop me. All right? So, John 20:25. Please, someone to read.
So the other disciples told him, "We have seen the Lord." But he said to them, "Unless I see the nail marks in his hands and put my finger where the nails were, put my hand into his side, I will not believe it."
So where is tupos here? Marks. Yes. The marks of the nails in his hands. Alright? Tupos. Next one. Acts 7:43.
"You have lifted up the shrine of Moloch and the star of your god Rephan, the idol you made to worship. Therefore I will send you into exile beyond Babylon."
Okay, where is tupos here?
Star?
No, no.
Idols.
Goodness. Marks. Coming from John. And next one. Idols. Sometimes it is translated images. What about 23:25? Acts.
"And he wrote a letter to this effect."
Goodness me. Where is the tupos? He's at the wrong place. No. Where is tupos here? A kind of letter. Tupos. And next one, 1 Timothy 4:12.
"Let no one despise your youth, but set the believers an example in speech and conduct, in love, in faith, in purity."
That is the president's speech in order to introduce you in a church. That's no one. What is the tupos here?
Example.
So we can save time. Peter's in 1 Peter 5, 3. No, we were there. 1 Peter 5, 3, we have examples too. Let's go to 1 Corinthians 10, 6. But I think it is the same meaning.
Now these things became our examples.
Okay. All right. And the last one, Romans 5, 14.
Nevertheless, death reigned from the time of Adam to the time of Moses, even over those who did not sin by breaking a command, as did Adam, who was a pattern of the one to come.
So Adam was the pattern of the one to come. So you see, when we consider, and that is all the references with tupos in the New Testament, when we consider all of them, it's very difficult to come with a meaning of tupos. I can say, and I hope so, you would agree with me, tupos is not a strong word. When you use it, you are sure. No, it depends of the context. It could be a letter, could be an example, a good example given. Oh, you are a good example for the youth of the church. Okay, tupos. Could be images, that is, idols. So you see, the meaning is very flexible. And I wonder if it is wise to build such a theology on tupos. That is just a question. Okay. Next, we need to continue our search. What about, well, of course we have tupos in the New Testament, but we know that in the time of the New Testament, what was the reading, what was the Bible for the church? Which kind of Bible did they use at those? Tell me? Yes, but in which language? In Greek. No, not in Hebrew.
Sorry.
Hebrew was just, well, nobody was able to read Hebrew except the priests. They could, well, Hebrew was as a kind of Latin for the Catholics before Vatican II. So they were used to hear Latin, but they were not able to understand. And Hebrew was read in the temple, in the synagogues, but you know that. And that is a recent discovery, that in the synagogues they use also Aramaic. The explanation, that the commentary of the Torah was given not in Hebrew, but was given in Aramaic. But mainly the Bible of the church, the Bible of the apostles, the Bible of the first believers, was the Septuagint in Greek, translation of the Old Testament in Greek. So we have to look, what is the, do we have tupos in the Septuagint? Yes, we have it. How many times? We'd say, oh, probably they are good Adventists, many, many times. Sorry, guys. 4 times. And where? Where? In very good books for us, 3 Maccabees, 4 Maccabees, so you enjoy that. Only 2 times in our canonical Old Testament. 1 time in Hebrew, in Exodus 25, 40, and we understand why. And the second time in Amos 5, 26. Let me consider first the non-canonical references. So if I go to 4 Maccabees 6:19, tupos is used in the saying, an example of impiety. If I go to 3 Maccabees 3:30, it is like in the book if I remember well, it was in Acts, a form of a letter. Okay, close to Mark, to Acts. If we go to Amos 5:26, can we go and read this text? Please. stop. Why is tupos here in Hebrew, in Greek? Idols. So this word is used to describe the idols. So you see, going to the Old Testament, I have this feeling that the word is not a strong one with a very positive background or meaning. And I've seen, let me, unless it's just a question.
Is it idols in the sense of image?
Do you see a difference between, in this case, between idols and images?
Well, no. I mean, if we're emphasizing images in a symbolic sense, symbolizing something else.
Yes, but I think in.
Idol as symbol of another reality.
Yes, but non-good realities.
Yes. But
okay.
Still the idea of copy, shadow, or something else.
But something bad. Yes,
the
but
bad,
something
yeah.
Something bad. Yes.
Negative.
Yes, that is negative. Yes. Going back to the Old Testament, I have the feeling that this word is not positive, but we have it in 25:40 Exodus. So we need to read 25:40.
Thou shalt put the staves into the rings by the sides of the ark, that the ark may be borne with them.
Exodus 25:40.
14.
Sorry, 40. Sorry.
See that you make them according to the pattern shown you on the mountain.
Okay, sorry. So here we have tupos in Greek. But tell me, we have a very similar verse in the same chapter, don't we? Saying exactly the same thing. Exodus 25. We are at the end of the chapter, 25:40. But if we go to 25:8, so what do we read in 25:8? Exactly the same. Do everything according to the pattern. All right? But surprisingly, we have tupos in 25:40, but we don't have tupos in 25:8. Why? And if you go next step, that is the Hebrew exam, what is the word behind tupos in Hebrew? So that is tabnit. Okay, but we have in 25:8 tabnit, we have in 25:40 tabnit, but the translation is not the same. That is very sorry. And the context and the meaning is exactly the same. In 25:8 we have the Greek paradigma. You see an English word coming from this one? Paradigm. Yes. And what is the meaning of paradigm?
Model.
Pattern. Sometimes example. All right? So surprisingly, it is as if the translators of the Septuagint were a bit reluctant to use tabnit, a tupos for tabnit, and most of the times they would use paradigma, which is a more positive word. So I wonder if we don't have here the warning. Moses, just at the beginning of the process of building the sanctuary on earth, be careful. What, and that is the question, what did he see, Moses, according to this verse? And where did he see something? What did he see? Traditional Adventist answer? No. Traditional Adventist answer, he saw the heavenly sanctuary. Isn't it? If we go to this text, You have seen the tupos of heavenly things. All right? So, if I try to... Oh, sorry. I'm going to... That is the deconstruction of the church of Christ. Well, you can charge Berit at Newbold College. She will pay for that. So, so we have... Whoop, heavenly things, okay. And then, tupos, and then, the earthly sanctuary, built by Moses. Is it okay? You do everything according to the tupos of. But this word, be careful, Moses. It was only a tupos. And when, not when, where did he see the tupos? In heaven? So why not bringing him in heaven to see here? Do we have the, well, we have the, this kind of vision in the book of Revelation, for example. John was introduced into heaven and he is ready to describe what he saw, and he can tell, I've seen blah 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 blah. Okay, we will consider that later. But this one, Moses, no, it has been shown to you on the mountain, and it was only a tupos. Be careful, Moses. Don't be, I will put it this way, don't be a pagan. And you know, for the pagans in those times, and not only in those times, there is a complete correspondence between earth and heaven. You know that. You have to read, you know that the Romanian, I have to be careful here. They have three great men. The first one, we'll say Ionescu. The second one, better than this one, better. Mircea Eliade. And the third one, of course, is Marcel, but that's... All right? Have you ever read of Mircea Eliade? You should read this man. Phenomenology of Religion. Phenomenology of Religion, or a small book in English, the title is Myth and Reality, published in 1963. What do we read according to Mircea Eliade? And he will give many examples. In the pagan, in any pagan system, you have a correspondence between earth and heaven. If you have a temple on earth, that means that you have a temple in heaven. If you have a city on earth, that means that you have a city in heaven. You have the city, let's say Babylon, okay, here, and Babylon in heaven. You have Jerusalem here, but you have Jerusalem in heaven. You have Nineveh here, but you have Nineveh in heaven. You have a temple, Delph sanctuary in Greece here, but you have the equivalent of the temple of Delph in heaven. Everything is duplicated. You understand the point? And that is the pagan thought. Moses, be careful. You were not at this level. Heavenly things. No, no. You have seen only a tupos, and you have built, and you will have to build according well, you have to follow what you have seen from the tupos, and that was a tupos only. Don't consider that what you built, you're going to build it here, will be the house of God. It is only the third level. You understand what I mean? Third level. Number one, number two, number three. And that is the beginning of a new theology of the holy place. I need to check here where I am. Well, just to come back for a second to tupos, you remember the story of Rachel taking the idols. You remember? From Laban, the father. And when you read the story, which is told again by a very important author for us, you know Flavius Josephus. You know him? So that is very interesting to see and to look at the commentaries given by Flavius Josephus. And when Flavius Josephus, at the time of the Epistle to the Hebrews, wants to describe the story of Rachel taking the idols, what is the word which is used by Josephus? Tupos. Tupoi. The idols are tupoi. Plural. Be careful, Moses. It was only a tupos. And then, more than that, if we go to the quote, Hebrews 8, see that you make everything according to the pattern that was shown you on the mountain. If we go and compare the quote, the text of Hebrews, and the Old Testament text, Exodus 25, if we compare the Greek, that is very interesting. Have you got it from your Bible works? The comparison? The verb, the tense of the verb is changed by Hebrews. Well, that's a bit exegetical, but we need to be precise here. The tense we have in the quote in the Septuagint, the verb is in the plus... No, I don't know. Sorry. I've forgotten the technical term for this tense in English. I need to check. Is it open, your box? May I check?
I don't. You can ask.
Where is your Greek?
Don't have it installed now.
It's not installed?
No.
Oh, I need to check there. Just a second. Yes. The tense, which is in the Greek Septuagint, is the perfect tense. Participle, dedeigmenon. That is to say, you have seen in the past, but you can understand that this tupos is still there today. Past, but with effect in the present time. But that is not the case in Hebrew. In Hebrews, it changed the tense, and he put an aorist. You have seen it. Full stop. Finished. You see the difference between the perfect? You have seen it, but there is a continuity, past and present, and blah blah blah. No, no, that was the verb in Exodus 25. But in Hebrews, I changed the same verb, deiknumi, but not with the perfect tense, but with the aorist. So you have seen, that was a vision. Full stop. Next part. So again, Moses, you have seen a tupos, and it is only a tupos. Ellen White would say a miniature model. Don't ask me, because she does not give further information. Was it three dimension, or so? I don't know. Was it a real miniature model, as the architects are ready to build miniature models? I'm pretty sure that for the Olympic Stadium in London, we will have once a miniature model, just to show, because if we are architects, we can just look at a plan and say, well, I understand I see what you mean. But we are not architects, so we need a miniature model. Okay? And I don't know how it was, but that is the word which is being... You just saw not the heavenly things, but a miniature model. Okay, and it was only that. And I think the problem of Judaism was, or is, to consider that the holy place on earth is the exact duplicate of the heavenly realities. And you need to have a strong place. And if you don't have it, you don't have your faith strong enough. And what is the story of the history of the Jewish people? Good place, good faith. No place, What about their faith? Nothing left. Be careful. It was only a tupos. Don't build everything on this tupos. It is only a place, and we will later consider what was the real meaning. But in fact, I am pretty sure that the Israelites did not consider the warning given to Moses. And I would like to extend, not only to stay on Hebrews, but to extend and to refer to the second book of Samuel, chapter 7, in which we have something very important for our topic about the holy place. You remember the background? We don't have time to read the chapter, but it's a very, very important chapter in the Old Testament. So what is the beginning of the story? David coming to see the prophet Nathan and saying to him, well, I have a good idea. You know, no more enemies. I have the capital city now, which is Jerusalem. I have a palace house for me, and I would like to build a house for the Lord. So I'm gonna build a temple. What do you think, Nathan? And what is the answer of Nathan? Go ahead, brother. God is with you. So that is very interesting. That is a proof that you can be a prophet and be out of the will of God. Because the very next night, what happened? God came and visited Nathan, saying, well, I have a word for you, for David. And what is the main sentence of David? I want to build the house. You remember that? So you need to refer to the chapter, to read the chapter. And what is the answer of God? If we start reading, I have not lived in house. First. Second idea, which is very important. Did he ask for house to be built? I've never asked. Never. So, I've never lived. In a house, I've never asked for a house to be built. Third, that is very important, the main idea of the chapter. You remember the sentence of David? I will build a house. And what is the answer of God to David? I will build the house. You get it in the text? So there is a story of I took you, if I go to verse 8, I took you from the pasture, from following the sheep, to be prince over my people Israel, blah, 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 blah. And I will appoint a place for my people Israel, and we plant them, blah, blah, blah. And if you go to verse 12, someone to read verse 12. Okay, carry on.
He is the one who will build a house for my name, and I will establish the throne of his kingdom forever.
Okay, so we have missed some verses in between, but the main answer of God is, I will build the house. And what is the meaning of this sentence for David? What is the meaning of the sentence, I will build the house? God speaking. Yes, that could be the first meaning, but if you go carefully and study the verse and the context, what does it mean to build the house of David? I will build a house for you.
Jesus is the house of David.
Yes, you are right, but you are going too fast.
To establish a kingdom.
And what is the main concern? Well, we are in Great Britain. We can understand that better than in other places.
The house
the main concern is who next?
Yes,
who next? So the queen, I understand, looking from a bit from outside, that she would be ready to leave the place, but she is not sure that it would be a good choice. So I will stay there. All right. But that is a main concern. Who next? And the answer given by God to David, don't be afraid. Don't worry. There will be always somebody. And of course, the end of it. And you see the link between the house, that is a building, and somebody. And we have the shift here. We have the shift here between the house, a building, walls, a roof, and somebody coming. Deconstruction, reconstruction. Temple, gospel, Jesus. You see? And that is very important, this chapter. Maybe as far as messianic ideas are important in the New Testament, this one is a very, very important chapter. I will build the house. I've never asked someone to build something for me. Unfortunately, they built a temple that is a house. And that is a very important idea I would like to share with you, maybe a surprising one, but I am pretty sure that the idea of building a temple, I mean a building, does not correspond to the will of God. I mean, I would make the difference between two kinds of wills. De jure. Sorry, it's in Latin, but I need to explain. And de facto. Let me take another example. What about having a king? Is it the will of God? Okay, what did he say? No. It's not according to my will. But at the end, what did he do? Okay, you want to have a king? Okay, I will even help you having a king. I will choose him. And that is such a God. Able to do his will, even though the way is not his way, because the king will be a foretaste of the Messiah. That is a God. To do his will from what is not his will. And that is de facto, you know, human history is here. It's not de jure, it's what I have decided as a God. I don't want a king for you. But you want it, okay? You want him? I will give him to you. But I will be in charge of choosing him, at the beginning at least. So you understand the difference between de facto and de jure? So what is the temple? You want a temple? Okay. Again. You want it? Okay, you will have it de facto. But I've said to Nathan, to David, sorry, I never asked for a building. And I have said to Moses, remember, it was only a copy of a typos. It was only a copy of a typos. Don't put a stress on the temple building as such. There is something much more important than the building. Don't put everything there. Because if you don't have a temple once, what about your faith? What about your practices? And we can check according to history. Destruction of the temple by Nebuchadnezzar. So what of the faith of Israel? Nothing left. What about the story of Antiochus Epiphany? The pollution of the temple? The beginning of the war. What about the temple of Herod? You understand the question of the disciples? The temple, Oh, it's so important. Oh, I can destroy it. And what was the answer? Well, if this temple is destroyed, that means the end of the world. Okay, you have a very nice building here. What about if this building is destroyed, a blast, let's say, tomorrow? What about the faith of the congregation? I'm pretty sure it will not be the end. You would say, okay, let us find a small house and put back everything in. But we start again. And I'm pretty sure it will be a new strength for building something and to... Okay, the building is important, but not that much. You understand what I mean? But for them, the temple. And you remember during the trial of Jesus, what was the word used to condemn Jesus? You remember the word? And they were looking for two witnesses who did not agree. That is funny. They were paid and they were not able to agree. But the sentence at the core of the trial, he said, which is not true, he said, you can destroy the temple, not I will destroy. And you remember the beginning of the ministry of Jesus in the Gospel of John, according to the Gospel of John, chapter 2? The first public, I would say, first public appearance and act of Jesus? The cleansing of the temple. And that is very interesting. You have it right at the beginning of the Gospel of John, which is not the case in the Synoptical. In the Synoptical, you have it at the end. But for John, and I will come later on that, that is very important to start the ministry of Jesus, saying there is something much more important than the temple itself. And you remember the end of the story, he was speaking about his death and resurrection, but meant of John, they were not able to understand him before the resurrection. All right? So you see the perspective and so de jure de facto. So you want to have it, you will have problem with this building. But okay, I will try to help you. And let me now consider maybe one of the silliest prayer we have in the Bible linked to the temple. If we go to the book of Kings, second book of, I think, let me check. No, it's not second. Cannot be. First Kings 8:27. That is the dedication of the temple. You can imagine the king is there, Solomon, and the people is around. Mission president, conference president, BUC president, maybe general conference or division president, okay. And you have the prayer of dedication. So that is very important. A lot of money has been put in the building, and the church members worked for months and months. And then you have the dedication and the press, the media. Okay, everybody is there, and then you have the prayer. 8:27, and what do we read in 8:27? But will God indeed dwell on earth? Even heaven and the highest heaven cannot contain you, much less this house that I have built. Oh, silly man. You have put so much money and effort in this building, and at the end, well, you will never be here. You see the tension? The temple. But right at the moment of the dedication of the temple, this man as a flash, good one, you will never, that will never be your house, because you cannot live or you cannot dwell in a human place. Even heaven cannot be enough for you. You see the tension, and we can ask the question, why did they build a temple? I see two main reasons. Tell me. Could be true, yes. Have you ever considered the other capitals in those times? In order to have a capital, you need at least two things: a palace for the king, and second, yes, a cathedral, you would say today, yes. You need a temple, but, well, not a temple. Go to Athens, go to many other important cities. You don't have only one temple. You have many temples. And the beginning of the story, well, I have a palace. But in order for the city to be a capital city, I need to add a temple. I think that is the mimetic reason. I want to do as I can see if I consider the other places. First reason. Second reason, a political reason. What about the tribes? I need to unite them. And in order to unite them, I need to find a good reason for them to come around and to be in Jerusalem for worship reasons. Feasts, festivals. They would come to Jerusalem, and that will be a strong link between the tribes. If you read the story, the tribes, well, they very often they were opposed, they fighted, but the temple just in the middle. Be careful, the holy place. I need to stop. Let me check. Just one verse, or another chapter. In the book of Acts, chapter 7. That is the Stephen speech, which is very important also. And you know that is a kind of story in one chapter, the story of Israel, in fact. And what is the end of this speech? I would like us to start reading in 44, please. Oh, no, I see that it's too late. We will start with that, because it's important. So see you when?
4 o'clock.
4 o'clock. Okay. Enjoy your meal.